Now then, do we have a lady guest who would like to traipse up to our microphone and have a word or two with us? Somebody with an interesting story, who has an interesting occupation.
A lady innkeeper.
A lady who maybe has an unusual job that, for the sake of being a lady, would be a little bit different. Something that a gentleman would more or less. Do we have anybody like that?
Not a lady innkeeper.
All right, ma'am. Fine.
Formerly was a lighthouse keeper.
Mm-hmm. And where are you, where's your inn?
In Vermont.
In Vermont. That's the one of the most beautiful of the New England states. Don't you think so?
What?
I say, don't you think that's one of the most beautiful of the New England states?
Well, there's only five or six. They're all pretty much... Once you've seen one, you've seen the other, as far as I can make out.
Do you run this inn on the old style of the...
Yes.
The stables and...
Pay
the
right on the nose.
What?
You pay.
Well, of course you pay, but I mean... Do you keep the old traditional inn atmosphere?
We try to. By that, I mean we don't have any central heating.
Oh.
And,
Fireplaces, things like that, huh?
Not so much a fireplace, but we just have one little, well, like a hearth in the kitchen there where the people, if they get chilly, can warm themselves.
Well, that would prove to be a little bit of a problem if you had a good many people staying at the inn, I should think. Now then, what is the background? What's your experience in this particular business? Have you run other inns?
Well, I have always thought that it would be nice someday to own a little inn of my own.
Mm-hmm.
And I shopped around and finally decided that the old Dutch cupboard inn up there in Vermont would be the place for me.
I wish you hadn't mentioned the name of the place, because that constitutes a... what we call in this business a plug.
Or a commercial.
Commercial.
500 and some odd stations, ma'am, I didn't get your name, but it could well run up into the $30 or $40.
You understand that, madam?
What?
I'm just trying to explain to you the commercial structure of the program.
$30 or $40 for just saying the name of my inn.
That's right. And
I'll be a monkey's uncle.
You said it from coast to coast almost, and we'll have to see you after the program. You'll speak to Mr. Conley, our young squirt over there. You'll make out the bill.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Not funny to invite you up for a thing, you know, talk to
a mean lady. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like for to have you meet two of the sweetest fellows in all the radio industry today. Bob and Ray.
Thank you very much, sir, and I hope we can only live up to that wonderful introduction. We have sent Wally Ballou.
You will.
Thank you, sir. That faith is unbounded.
Aren't you going to stay?
No, he decided to leave. I don't know whether he has so much faith in us as that.
Well, if you didn't, I must, I suppose.
Okay, so you can see it there. Wally Ballou is at a tap dancing school for adults. And we thought that might be interesting to see what's going on. Now, these are not youngsters or children. These are grown men and women, some of them in their 40s, who are learning to tap dance just for the fun of it.
They're all in full possession of their faculties, too, which makes it even more unusual.
So let's call in Wally Ballou now at that adult tap dancing school in New York.
Wally Ballou at the adult tap dancing school here in New York. Maybe in the background of our parabolic microphone.
No, that
you
is...
can hear
no,
the
no, no. Look.
Tap dancing music.
Look, if you're going to tap, you got to be light on
That's
your
the
dog.
Impresario speaking now.
He's dancing around here like you're just trying to get out of a forest fire.
He's
you know?
Dressed in long underwear.
Now, you got to be a little gingerly on your dog. So let's try it again. Freddie at the piano, if you would strike it up.
Right.
All of the tap dancers here have
one,
beatings
two,
on.
No.
Proceed with panoramic tap dancing.
This course is costing upwards of $80. All right, stop.
He's explaining how much the course costs now.
This is costing you upwards of $80.
Several of
now
them are blanching visibly.
It's obvious that you haven't practiced at home. Now, you remember last week when you were down here, I gave you a couple of little steps. I said I wanted you to have them digested by this week. And you're back here now, as ignorant about tap dancing as you were a week ago.
Now, the tap dancing...
Now, if $80 means that little to you, then let me quickly assure you that my time means more than me.
He's opening a set.
Freddy, tell him again.
He's going to eat while he instructs the plan. What are the...
No, Freddy, not that! Freddy!
Faster, slow,
well, faster.
Who can
tap dance?
Can tell you what you want.
Well, I'll tell you what I want. What I want to tell you. I
don't know what tempo you want me to play.
Well, I don't want any of you got.
Seems to be a little bit of rivalry between the impresario and the piano player.
Okay, now, Fred.
Well, now they're going to
start
again.
One, two, three.
Three of the dance students just left, a little bit heavy on their feet.
What's your meatloaf for dinner, Paula?
Two more of the dancers have just left the floor, leaving three to accept the instruction from the impresario.
I'm going to try it once more. Now, if you don't cooperate with me, I'm going to have to ask you to leave. Try it.
One of them did leave when he said he would have to ask them. Well, the two of them...
Freddy, I'm going to ask you to leave now. If you're going to sit down...
All right,
you
feel that way,
Father.
I'll see if you can teach that dancer without a piano.
I can...
Let's see if you can.
You're there with the microphone. You better get out of here.
See, sir?
Yeah, you're...
But we're broadcasting over the radio. Wally Ballou.
No, not the right broadcast. You didn't check with me.
No, but we're just trying to put our finger on the pulse of New York life.
Well, I may put the fist on your pulse in a minute if you don't get out of here.
All right, why don't I just leave with my mobile equipment, my turbo microphone?
Ow!
A little bit of Americana there at an adult tap dancing school.
Now then.
I'm here. I'm the author that Mr. Wilbur Conley invited up here to...
You are... Bonfilio Rumpelmeyer, is that right?
No, sir, it's just my writing again.
What is your name, then?
Alfred E. Nelson.
Alfred E. Nelson, who is our author guest on this session, and the book that you have just written, Mr. Nelson...
History of the United States.
History of the United States. I imagine this is quite a heavy work, quite a lot of pages,
Well, it has over 1,100 pages. And, of course, I'm just beginning to scratch the history of this country.
Well, now, Ray and I both got a preview copy of this last week, and there are a few questions I'd like to ask you about it, Mr. Nelson. But first of all, you had Abraham Lincoln driving to his inauguration in an automobile.
Well, that was...
Did you check on that at all?
Well, there's several glaring errors in the book that, unfortunately, I didn't catch. That was one... Referring to the father of our country as Nelson Washington, too. I thought I was just thinking of my last name, and it was a misprint. Well, actually, of course, his name was George.
George Washington.
Yeah.
You had several things like that. I remember you had the editor, the publisher of Poor Richard's Almanac. You had Benjamin French.
Yes, instead it should have been Benjamin Franklin.
Franklin. When did all of these things come to your attention, these mistakes, these glaring errors that you
had? Well, a friend of mine brought them to my attention. After the book was published, of course, I sent out several books to reviewers of papers, and then I send some to my friends. And he no sooner got a hold of it than he called me at home and started to point out several little errors that unfortunately got through.
Yeah. Well, here now, like on page 820, you have the first capital of the United States in Bailey's Mistake, Maine.
Mm-hmm.
What prompted you to do that?
Well, it was just a carelessness on my part.
Did you do any research on this book of American history at all?
Yes, I did considerable research, and of course what happened was I relied on my memory a great deal.
And what you learned
which
in
has
school? How far did you go in school, incidentally?
I went through the eighth grade.
And you wrote
we had
very
intensive. Well, we had very intensive history courses.
Well, I know, but an eighth grade education in American history is not enough to qualify a person, be he genius or not.
Well, that's what you say.
Well, if your book proves it, Mr. Nelson.
Well, it was just that I had all the facts. It was the names that were wrong. I had dates wrong, for instance. I had the Civil War happening in 1911.
I know.
Which was wrong. And that, of course, I could have checked by just asking almost anybody, but here again,
you
I'm
just
so
like
dogged.
It, yeah.
When I sit down at the typewriter, I just like to start and
well,
finish.
Well, frankly, I think, and Ray agrees with me, too, he was mentioning just before he went on the air, that this is a pretty A sloppy piece of work.
It's a shabby piece of work, and I'm one of the first to admit it.
It sells, I understand, for $24.50, which is a ridiculous price for an 1,100-page work.
A leather-bound book, and the publisher, of course.
I don't care about the binding, Mr. Nelson. The binding means nothing. It's the book inside.
The binding does mean something, because it's leather, and it's very nice, glossy paper. The book must weigh 8 or 10 pounds.
That's all of that.
Here's a... Would you like a copy?
No, I don't want a copy of it. It's no use to me. I'm not going to show this to my children and say, when they ask me about history, I'm not going to look to this for a
reference. Let me put it this way. I'll never appear on your show again, either.
Well, that'll be perfectly all right with us, Alfred Nelson.
So long, sir.
And sign out on your way out, please.
Next, it's out to Elizabethtown, Kentucky. Wally Ballou there at a fire engine factory. Come in, please. Wally Ballou.
Wally Ballou speaking from this famous old landmark in Elizabethtown, Kentucky, the nation's oldest manufacturer of fire engines, at least, around here. And to tell us this unique story is the manager of plant number 7, who's standing next to me, Bonfiglio H. What is that last name?
Blanton.
Blanton. And Mr. Blanton, how long have you been...
You call me Smiley. Everyone else does.
Smiley, how long have you been manufacturing fire engines?
Well, I, myself, have manufactured fire engines since I was 22 years old. My father before me manufactured fire engines for years and years.
I see.
And we, turn out a nice product here. And, of course, it's quite a job selling one of these things.
Well, I should quite imagine, because fire engines are known for their lasting qualities. They don't ever run up too many miles, I guess.
No, that's right. The average mileage on a trade-in job would be about 1,100 miles.
1,100 miles. Well, your business has certainly been quite extensive here. How many are you making right now in production?
We're making it.
You're making what?
We're making it. We make about one a year. And if we can sell one fire engine a year, then it's a big, big year for the company.
So that's a fully equipped engine.
Fully equipped with your hose, your ladder, your helmet, your gauges, your steering wheel.
Your whistles, your sirens.
That's right. Your everything.
Have you ever thought of trying to sell these things to other businesses like
pipe
surgeons or something?
No. We have been thinking lately, the board of directors, of turning out other things that we could sell, such as stand-up trucks.
I can't hear you, Smiley.
I say we have recently been thinking of turning out other...
You smell smoke.
Yes. We have been recently, as I was saying, trying to develop a new product.
Is that smoky smell a normal thing around here?
No, it is not.
How about those billowing clouds of black smoke?
No. We have for years been trying to think of some new product that we could make.
I see Flay there licking at the workbench.
We've been in contact with the Daily Tree Surgeon people.
The entire end of the building has just caved in, Smiley. And for safety's sake, I think we'd better take our microphones out of...
What do you say we make our lucky phone call for today? Call has been placed, and I believe the operator is standing by with our lucky recipient, who today is in Eugene, Oregon. And in just a moment, we hope to make the connection. Hello?
Hello?
Hello, Eugene, Oregon. Bob and Ray calling from New York.
Yes?
You're the recipient...
Long distance from New York.
Yes, it is, sir. This is the recipient of our lucky phone call. Is your name Bonfiglio... D. Branton?
No, sir.
Well, who are you, please? Whom am I talking with, please?
I'm Dr. Carlos P. Effnett.
Do you live, Dr. Effnett, at the Branton home?
Yes, I have been rooming here while studying.
And,
at the school.
Is it true that you haven't hung out your shingle yet?
What's that?
I say, is it true you haven't hung out your shingle yet?
No, I haven't hung out my shingle yet.
In other words, you're an intern, doctor, is that right?
No, I'm taking some advanced courses.
Oh, I see.
The doctor degree I have, of course, is in English.
Yes. Well, now you...
You made a little mistake there, I suppose.
Oh, you're not a medical doctor?
No.
Yes, I did think you were a physician.
I know quite a bit about medicine. Mm-hmm. I'm associated with a good many physicians, but I haven't studied it.
All right. Well, now, have you... did you know about this lucky phone call coming to the Branton home?
No, we had no idea it was going to come here, and I know that the Branton folks will be very... They just went downtown to do some shopping. They'll
sure.
be very excited
sure.
when
well,
I tell them.
Sure.
I wouldn't want the prizes myself. I'll see that they get them.
Well, there aren't any prizes, Doctor.
The
you
what?
Might tell them that.
There what?
There aren't any prizes. It's
well,
just...
then what do you bother calling people out in
well, it's
clear
really...
across the country for?
No, it's only...
I was upstairs studying. Now, if I came down here...
Well, you're not
room,
studying to be a doctor. I think you're
I'm
studying.
I'm studying.
I know, but...
The... And if you're going to just call around the country and make lucky phone calls...
Well, do you realize the odds against us calling you on this particular
tremendous.
Day?
I'd say they're upwards.
Millions.
Millions to
yes,
one. But
one.
So what?
Well,
really,
that's it.
What did we
there's
get out
our
of it?
Operator. That's it. We finished
right.
our call.
All right, Doctor.
We did talk
Watch
to Dr. Dr. Efneth instead of Mr. Blanton, but I'm sure they'll all be happy out there in Eugene, Oregon. Thank you for your cooperation. Are we going out to Hollywood first today for those rushes that we promised to show?
We are going to show rushes?
Well, we sent Baloo out there to the set.
You mean work for all of us, I suppose.
Yeah, to the set of a new motion picture.
Oh. Oh, who's been playing with these earphones? You know, when we call in Wally Baloo, we have to put on earphones to hear what he's saying at the other end. And gee whiz, it caught my wig. And I thought sideways.
That's
I hope
terrible.
I hope members of the studio audience will not be too shocked.
But the part goes from your left ear right over to behind your right ear.
How do you like that? I ran out of spruce gum this morning and had to use spearmint.
Now on to Hollywood and Wally Baloo. This is what?
Wait a minute. Is that right? Everything right? Let's try again, Master Control, shall we? To Hollywood and our correspondent, Wally Baloo.
Come in, Baloo. This is Wally Baloo on Soundstage 7 at Repulsive Pictures, where rushes for the new film The Proud of the Pooped are about to be run off. I'm speaking here with the star of the picture, Rock McGurk, who is just about to film the final scene. Is that right, Rock?
That's right, Mr. Baloo.
This is the barroom fight scene?
That's right.
And we're going to see some of those breakaway chairs in action.
Well, I think might be of interest to your listeners that I perform in these actual fight scenes. There's no seconds or anything like that. And just
don't have any...
Alan Ladd and I both fight each other here.
I see. Who comes out the victor?
Alan Ladd.
He does, eh?
It's a pretty good fight, and it lasts about 2.5-3 minutes. And... he hit me with a pitchfork handle.
Well, then he would end up in the role of the proud, is that right? And you?
Well, we're both poofed. But he has more pride than I have.
Well, I see the director calling for attention over there, so we'll just stand by.
Attention over here.
Watch for the
I want attention.
Final scene.
This is the fight scene, scene 11-5-0. Take two.
Sound.
Sound. Quiet on the set.
We're rolling.
Roll up.
That's it, ladies and gentlemen. Now, the first aid people are coming over to examine. Mr. Ladd seems to be okay. And Mr. McGurk? How do you feel?
He shouldn't have hit me that hard. It's only a movie.
I noticed that breakaway chair was a real chair.
It was a real chair made out of oak. And I'm telling you, that hurt.
Well, that seltzer bottle wasn't made of candy, was it?
I'll get you a little, Ladd! This is only a picture, you know!
Oh, with a threatened warning...
Punch you in the nose when we get off this set.
Rock McGurk walks off the set in a huff. Oh, there's another little fight setting up. Get back.
Roll him.
Get back.
Get back, please.
Get back, please. Well, this certainly is a surprise. And from the set of the motion pictures, Wally Baloo returns to... Everett.
Thank you. Back here in New York. That was very exciting, wasn't it?
Just like to say a hi-de-hi and hello to one or two of our guests. here in the studio. This gentleman here in the cocked hat. What do you do, sir?
I'm in the packaging game.
Programs, you mean, for radio and television, things like that?
No, packaging bags and cartons and things like that.
I see.
I just designed a brown paper bag that will completely disguise a bottle of booze.
Well, that probably will be the first time that I don't know whether it's the bottle or how you carry it, but you never can disguise that. That's a pretty good contribution, I think.
Well, I've been working on it a good many years. Of course, it all started from embarrassment, like any good invention.
Yeah.
Every time I'd carry a bottle of booze somewhere, people would know it was.
Well, I think
so
you've all heard
it. Necessity is the mother of invention.
Well, I was going to say, we've all heard the expression embarrassment is. So this is a sample of it here that you have?
Yes.
It has a little handle on it there.
That's right.
Doesn't look like, looks like it might be a container of ice cream.
I thought it looked like a jug of wet bait.
Mm-hmm. But it looks anything like what you would think it should look like.
That's right.
Very good. And what are you wearing the cocked hat for?
Well, it wasn't cocked when I came in, but I hit my head coming through the doorway and put it cocked.
Uh-huh.
Knocked it cocked.
Okay. Well, are you enjoying the show here today?
Quite a bit. I like the girls a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll have them back, of course, for the finale number. They're changing costumes right now. And just a word to you, ma'am.
Yes?
Welcome to the Bob and Ray Show. You know, it's been quite a few days since we've talked with anyone in the audience. And we'd like to just find out where you're from, what you do, what your interests are. Where are you from?
Dover, Delaware.
And you,
What was the second one you asked
you
me?
Would you work or go to school or what?
Go to school?
Well,
great Scott, I'm over 60.
Well, it's just kind of a...
school I'd be going to. I've gone to the school of hard knocks, mm-hmm. Let me tell you, young man.
Are you married then, ma'am?
Yes.
And, what do you do besides keep your husband happy?
Well, we have a small little variety store down in Dover. And he couldn't be with me this weekend.
He's tending a store, huh?
That's right. He works. Next time, when I go back, he'll go off for a few days.
Well, I think you've proved that you live a very exciting life, and thank you very much.
Well, I don't think so. It's real boring down there.
Yeah.
And I got sore feet.
Back now to the giant stage. And right now, for a few seconds, we've scheduled a chat with some of the people passing through on tour here this bright day. How about you, ma'am?
What about
Can I have your name and where you're from, please?
Yes, Miss Ethel Douglas.
Mrs. Ethel Douglas, is it?
Ethel Douglas.
Where are you from, Miss Douglas?
I'm from Rochester, New York.
Very nice
Who's
place up there.
Who's this fool that's been on the tour?
I was going to get over to him.
Great.
I noticed...
Scott, he's ruined it because they take you on a very interesting tour here.
No,
and they point out things that I would have been very interested in.
Yeah.
This fool dragging
well,
all
why don't
these
we
animals
him,
along and made so much noise.
Let me just move over if I have enough wire here. Sir, may I ask your name, please?
Certainly. You may.
What is it?
And my name is Harvey Atkins.
Are these your animals that you have here with you?
Right, every last one of them.
Roosters and so forth?
Roosters, there's hogs, there's cows, there's goats.
Just how come, Mr. Atkins? By that I mean, I take it you're a farmer.
That's right, I am. I'm probably the only farmer left here in Manhattan.
Oh, you're from New York City, is that right?
Yes, I am, and I'd like to take... Does this go across the country?
Oh, all over the United
well,
States.
Well, I'd like to... Say hello to my fellow Rubes.
Oh, you run a farm here in the center of Manhattan. Where do you have this thing? I can't imagine.
Up on top of the building.
Well, what do you got all the animals with you for? What's the...
Well, I tell you, I'm the only friend they got. They follow me around all the time. I'm used to it. Now,
you look pretty ridiculous in a tour here with a bunch of grown people, and you a grown man. With cows trailing along behind you and chickens and roosters and that stuff.
Well, I didn't come here to be upbraided.
All right, then.
Whatever that may.
Apologies, will you?
Go on, fellas.
What did they like most, incidentally?
Color television. They loved it.
All right.
Thought it might be interesting to find out what some typical people receive for Christmas presents. Wally Ballou has taken the mobile unit out to a village not far from New York, so...
So if Wally can hear us, he's up, we understand, in front of a well-lit home in Westchester.
I'm rapping on the door of a Mr. Lancelot Whitcomb.
Yes?
Mr. Whitcomb, Wally Blue of the radio.
Come in.
I wonder if we could just talk to you about how your Christmas was. Did you get everything you wanted, sir?
Well, I got most everything I wanted.
I notice you're wearing a...
This blazer, sport car blazer.
Yes.
Says Jaguar on it here on the lapel.
Uh-huh, that scarf, that's good.
Scarf, that's a...
Those goggles for driving?
Yeah, those are the goggles I got. See there, Polaroid.
Uh-huh, pretty
Bends
good.
Bends the rays of the sun. This cap, I haven't taken out of the box here. You can see it still in the box there. It's a sport cap.
Yep, and there's a gift certificate for 100 gallons of gasoline.
That's right.
You must be pretty happy, huh?
Yes.
You're a sports car enthusiast,
I certainly
you?
Am.
Did you get a Jaguar for Christmas like
yes,
you were hoping?
Yes, I did.
Can we see it, sir?
Certainly. It's out in the garage. You want to come with me?
Nice breezeway you have.
Yes. A friend of mine gave this to me.
You don't look very happy, sir, for a man who's received all of this stuff for Christmas.
My
father woke up and found a Jaguar under my tree.
Let me just open the garage.
Oh. Oh, yes.
Jaguar hasn't eaten for 2 days.
I see what you mean. Shut the door.
Merry Christmas.
Wally Ballou returning you. This is Bob Elliott at the main information desk of Crumliff's department store. Rather than speak with the information clerk, I'm going to go up to a floor walker who's standing just a few feet away wearing a carnation and have him tell us something about the Christmas crowds and the rush that he's all a part
Hi,
of.
Hi, Joe. I'm William McKinley Duxton.
Mr. Duxton, we spoke to you just before you went on the air. I wonder if you'd tell us how you operate during a big rush like this. Do you get more questions at the Christmas
season? Yes, but you see, the funny part of all this, of course, is that I am not an employee of this store.
You're hired just for the Christmas time? Is that
I'm
right?
Not even hired at all.
Uh-huh.
I'm more or less self-employed. I do is, of course, arrive at the store, and I come down without a top coat or overcoat, and I have a flower in my lapel.
Yes,
I don't wear a hat. So that when I come in the store, I look like an employee and I look like a floor walker.
Striped morning trousers there, too, huh?
That's right. I bought these years ago for a wedding I went to, and they fit in very well now.
But just
what
do you do
with them very well now?
How are you self-employed here if you're not a floor walker?
Well, when a lady comes up to me, for instance, and says, you sell minks here, I say, no, we don't, madam.
But they have a big mink department here.
I know, but as a joke, I see her go flying out the door to another shop. And then I'll have some lady come up and say, where's housewares? I'll say, it's up on the 11th floor.
Uh-huh.
And up she goes, and they're in the basement.
Well, I know that. Well, this is kind of a mean thing to do, especially at Christmas time. It must make people a lot more work, a lot more time.
Oh, sure shop. It does. They get blazing mad. I keep changing. I don't stay around the same spot too long, because when that lady gets up to the 11th floor, you know, and finds out that they're in the basement, well, and... The pearl flies.
You can't be in the same place.
No, I keep moving.
Well, that's kind of an unhappy thing,
now,
but I guess you get fired
out
of it.
No,
oh, I'm sorry. Which way is the main exit? I've got to leave.
Third floor. Take the escalator.
Thanks very much. And a little earlier this week, I made a trip out to one of the foremost toothpick manufacturing factories, and I'd like to run that tape for you right now. I'll have the story of toothpicks from the very beginning.
I welcome here to the toothpick factory.
So this is your lunch hour, is that right?
That's right. All the machines have stopped here.
Uh-huh.
While we enjoy our lunch, we all usually bring our own sandwiches here to the toothpick factory. We're very proud of our factory, young man. We were the one of the first to institute putting points on both ends of a toothpick.
That's right.
So if you could put a toothpick, say, in a cantaloupe ball and then put a little sandwich on the other end. We were instrumental in that.
Who's out of that machine? Well, it's 1 o'clock. I think they're back from lunch now. Over here, we're standing right where the giant logs come rolling into this factory.
And what happens to them
after
they...
Police come down from the northern part of the state. They come down floating down the river. We take them out one at a time, bring them up here on this arrangement that you see, and the logs come in through that window light,
mm-hmm.
and then they're shaved down. I might point out also that each and every one of these toothpicks is hand-sandpapered. We're very proud of that.
I think you're the only manufacturer that does that, and I might point out that their slogan is, not a knot in a box bowl.
That's right. We try never to have a knot in any of our toothpicks. It's just a matter of pride with us. We could get away with it, I suppose, by painting them, but we just don't bother.
How about these new plastic toothpicks that
have... Oh, don't mention the word plastic to us.
Well,
they just won't stand up like a wooden toothpick.
Didn't mean to bring up...
Oh, I don't like that term at all.
How many people are employed here, George?
We have about 25 men who work at whittling down the points on each one with a scout knife.
Uh-huh.
Then we have about 20 sandpapers who sit there with little pieces of sandpaper and sandpaper them down. Then we have the girls who put them in a little box. And then we have big men who put the little boxes in the big boxes, and bigger men who put the great big boxes onto the truck.
And there they go.
And we have very, very big men who push the truck.
I see. How many do you turn out in a day's time?
Oh, we put out about 40 to 50,000 of these every day. And it's keeping right moving all the time on an 8-hour. I have 11 men working days there. I have a night shift of 16 men who do nothing but tear down the logs.
Well, there's the toothpick story, and the next time you use one, you'll know just where it came from, how it was made, and so forth, with our thanks to...
Right.
George, everybody's back from lunch now, and the factory is going at full rate of speed here, and our thanks for the cooperation shown. Now back to...
Hello, everybody. We were going to answer some questions about radio from our studio audience. And I think they've all been written on cards, but I'll ask you to stand and give your question, audience, as we point to you with the electronic pointer there.
Okay, you, sir. Your hand is up. What do you want?
How about that lady over there? Do you have one about radio you want answered?
Yes. Where's Mary Marlin?
Mary Marlin was a dramatized serial story that was on for a number of years. Mary was married to Joe Marlin.
Where is she? Cut out all the palaver, Buster.
David Post was a good friend of
the family. I know all that. Where is she?
Joe went to the Far East, as I remember, and I don't think he returned.
He was elected to the United States Senate.
Yes.
I think you neglected to inform the people.
That's right.
There.
Now, just where Mary is now, I do not know. I'm sorry,
Thank
madam.
Thank you. Well, you could have said that in the beginning.
Can't answer that. How about that old gaffer over there in the second row?
You mean me?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not too old.
Leo, your voice is much younger than you look.
You can answer any questions about...
No, we don't say we can. We'll try to. We'll attempt. We'll endeavor in every way to give you a satisfactory answer to a question about radio.
Okay. How come this station comes in on this particular spot on the dial?
Well, the way it's arranged, it's... if there were a lot of other stations on this spot on the dial, why... Well, it would be pretty...
You're not answering the question, pal. Cut out the palaver. Just straight...
Well, I'm answering it to the best of my ability.
Well, you set yourself up as an authority, and I've thrown a question at you, and you've muffed it.
Well, you see, each station is assigned...
I know that! I know that! I'm asking you...
Let me put it this way. Can you imagine the confusion if you had three or four stations on this particular spot?
I know the confusion! I can understand that.
Well, I
want to know is why you never waver. You're always right at the same spot all the time. How come? How do you do that?
Because we like it here. This is the
place.
I know.
How do you keep your signal, your radio signal, from going all over the place?
Because we aim it here.
You can't aim it at a spot that... Oh, don't give me that. You don't know, do you?
No, I don't.
Okay. Sit down.
Any other questions?
Me?
All right,
then. Who's Mary Marlin?
You asked that question.
I know, but I wasn't satisfied with the first answer.
Well, I gave you the best answer I could, and I didn't have any other. I think there's another station coming in on this frequency.
Yeah, that's right. Sorry, sir, that we couldn't have answered your question because it probably would have helped us. Well, yeah, there's
two
stations.
Sounds like a pretty good show.
Yeah, too bad. This is the Bob and Ray Show, so stand by.
Ray Ballou speaking from the crossroads of the world, Times Square in New York City. And a goodly group of people is gathered around me here on this calm, beautiful evening. The night before the holiday, tomorrow, if parade and so forth. We want to get the holiday plans from one or two of the passersby. How about you, ma'am?
Hello.
Could we have your name, please?
Yes.
And are you going to be watching the parade tomorrow?
I don't know whether I'll be able to get on downtown or not tomorrow. It depends.
What are you doing in town this evening?
Just finished work, and then I'm heading home now.
What kind of work do you do, ma'am?
Well, I work with the telephone company.
Oh, I see. An operator, huh?
No, a line woman.
Oh, you mean you climb the telephone poles?
That's right.
Whenever there's any problems?
That's right.
Well, there aren't many to climb in New York City anymore, are there?
No, there aren't. Most of it's underground work now.
Uh-huh. What do you think of the weather we've been having?
Yes, certainly is very springy.
Very spring-like. The evenings have been cool. Sun sinks west.
Well, I don't know the weather. The weather is very hard to figure in this part of the country, I found.
Well, I found that, too. I've not been here too long, but I find that a little bit of variety, all kinds of weather.
Well, our winters, I've noticed lately, have been a lot more open. And the springs just don't seem to exist at all.
Uh-huh.
In other words, my feeling is that we go just exactly from winter... Right into spring.
That's right. It's kind of
summer, I mean.
Just a quick jump and spring is kind of forgotten.
Well,
that's a funny thing, the way this has turned out. But we have
to... around to the back of the building!
That's some good snow this winter.
I don't suppose we should complain, because, generally speaking, though...
Okay, Lieutenant. Get that deck pipe going onto the roof.
I don't think we should complain,
see
because...
you can get in through the window up there with your hand
line. The weather has been... what I'd call...
Well, I think like today we had a very pleasant day, sunny in the morning, and threw up the day, but with a...
get a ladder up there.
With a good breeze.
Up on that roof.
Yes.
Open that roof.
Well, and it's been so windy. Have you noticed that? For this time of year?
That's right. A little more...
we're going to need it here.
A little normal. Where do you plan to spend your vacation? Where will the weather be good?
Did we cut that line from Tyson?
Good. Thank you, Wally Ballou. Excellent job again. This
Gee whiz, I think there was more going on there than he was broadcasting.
I think so, too.
We have a top songwriter here with us. We don't play records on the show, but we like to have contact with the musicians, the men who make music, the men who write it. And that is the case here, because here is Harold Frelinghuysen. James M. Frelinghuysen, who has written some of the great all-time songs of the past. I just can't even remember one. James, what was... I know you write holiday songs.
That's right. I specialize in holiday songs.
You wrote one. The last one I remember was way back there for Father's Day, wasn't it? Or Mother's Day?
Well, I wrote one for each one of those days. I wrote one for Arbor Day.
I remember your Mother's Day song. My old lady is one heck of a gal.
Yes. And my Father's Day song started... you may be a jerk, but to me, you're my old man.
Yeah, and then, of course, we've had Thanksgiving songs and so forth. And today, you have brought us a Labor Day song.
Right.
And we're going to have a chance to preview it for the first time on the air, without music, of course. But it'll be kind of a musical appetizer for things to come.
Okay. Holidays may come and holidays may go, but, brother, give me Labor Day. It's a little bit of all right in there. I don't mind Christmas, and I don't mind the 4th of July. But when I know Labor Day is here, then, boy, I'm right up in the skies. Labor Day is a peach of a day for me, and I know that Labor Day will be a peach of a day for you, Labor Day.
James L. Frelinghuysen.
James M.
Frelinghuysen, one of the top lyricists in the musical business along Tin Pan Alley in this day and age.
Holidays may come and holidays may go, but brother, when I know it's Labor Day, I'm really on the go. It's a peach of a day, right?
Another chorus? That's not the same thing as before.
It's the second chorus.
Oh,
Arbor Day may be okay, and so may the 4th of July, but when I know it's Labor Day, I hope that you'll be with you and I.
Thank you, Harold Frelinghuysen.
James M.
Frelinghuysen for dropping by. Here at our Bob and Ray microphone today, Mr. Waycroft U. Fergus, who has the most unsuccessful success story to relate to us.
He was here yesterday for the program, and unfortunately, time ran out. We had to put him up at the Bob and Ray Hotel. Mr. Fergus, welcome to our show, and I know that you have a very sad and unsuccessful story to relate.
Well, I am a complete failure.
A what?
Spell that C-O-M-P-L-E-A-T.
That's rather the archaic, isn't it? The archaic way of spelling it.
Yes, but it's complete.
Well, now, Waycroft, if you don't mind me calling you that, you hail from the Midwest somewhere, I understand.
Yes, I started off when right after I flunked out of school, as the president of a bank in my hometown.
I see.
After 2 weeks there, they saw through me immediately.
Yeah.
And I was demoted to vice president, where I...
Within 2 weeks, you became vice president, is
that right? Yes, and then after not distinguishing myself there for a week, I was put over on loans.
Well, of course, that was a position of trust, a position of envy among the other employees, I should imagine.
Yes. After 5 days at loans, I made several mistakes. First of all, I didn't secure any of the loans.
Well, this is a familiar story. You were then made chief teller, isn't that right?
That's right. I was made chief teller. And then my...
Where did you go then on your way down?
Well, after I displayed my complete lack of knowledge of arithmetic and bookkeeping, I was put into a uniform and made guard.
In other words, you had a position of responsibility and trust on your next step downward.
While cleaning my gun, I shot off one of my toes. And I was then put in charge of cleaning the window on the outside.
In other words, you now were on the outside of the bank rather than inside, although still being paid by the bank.
Yes. After accidentally setting off the alarm, I was promoted then down to keeping the sidewalk clean and neat.
Picking up cigarettes and things like that otherwise would have made the bank.
And scraping gum off the sidewalk with a stick with a nail on it.
Well, you certainly proved yourself quite unsuccessful at that point. What was your next step downward, sir?
My next step downward was to go back downstairs and be in charge of sweeping down by the vaults.
Well, then you still were with the bank at this point.
No, I was not, and...
Well, you decided to sweep around the vaults, although you had been discharged by the bank.
Yes,
right?
And at 3 a.m. in the morning.
I see. And from there, you spent some time in prison, I understand.
Yes, one of the state-owned institutions.
Mm-hmm. And upon your release, did you continue your unsuccessful...
No, that's where my story is now. I just wanted to prove that I am a complete failure.
Thank you very much, Waycroft. You, Fergus, for having the nerve to come here today. I know you're masked, but even so, we know who you are. And we certainly wouldn't want to help you in any way possible.
Well, thank you again very much.
To keep your claim to that title.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Goodbye. We have a little surprise planned for today. Are the two people all set in opposite studios, Ray?
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Whirley and her brother, Mr. Whirley, whom they haven't seen. They haven't seen each other for 67 years. And we've flown Mrs. Whirley here, and Mr. Whirley lives right here in New York.
He took a bus to get here.
We have them in separate studios, and we think that they're going to really have a big surprise in store for them, thanks to us.
Why don't you talk to Mrs. Whirley first?
All right. Well, would you bring in Mrs. Whirley, please? Come on in, my dear.
Come on, come lively lady, will you?
Oh, wait, she's 87 years old.
Well, I don't care, Bob. We only have
25. Oh, I know. Let's be kind to her. Right over
here. Come on, lady. Step along. Come
on. Yeah, mother, right over here.
Thanks, Scott.
Sit down, if you will. You are Miss Tabitha Whirley, is that right?
Tabitha
Whirley.
Yes, a lot of people make that mistake.
And where do you make your home, Miss Whirley?
I live in Bondurant, Wyoming.
That's a wonderful country out there, I know.
Yes.
And you are 87 years young, is that right?
That's right.
And you were flown here by Bob and Ray. And do you have any idea why you're here in this studio today?
I don't have the remotest idea why I'm here.
Is there anyone...
Can you speak up, lady, please?
Oh, she's speaking up, Ray. Don't...
Great Scott.
Do you have anybody that you would particularly like to see after, let's say, a great number of years? Someone you used to know?
No, I don't suppose.
Anybody in your family, Miss Whirley, that... You particularly...
My family, let's see. No. No, it's been so long since I've seen any of them anyway. I don't suppose I'd know them if I fell over them anyway.
Do you remember your brother, Frank?
Sure, sure.
How long is it since you saw him?
Well, let's see. It must be about 70 years.
70 years. We thought it was only 66, but mm-hmm.
It's 70.
Well, we have a little surprise arranged for you, Miss Worley. We like to do this now and then with the excess cash that we have from our expense account. And I wonder if you'd open the door over there and bring in our next guest.
All right, come on, will you, pal? Step along.
Now, Mr. Frank Worley is facing his sister, Tabitha, for the first time in 66 years. Let's hear what they have to say.
Well, what'd you want me here for?
This is your sister, Tabitha, Mr. Worley.
Oh, hello, Tabitha.
Hello, Frank.
All right, now, will you go over and sit down in our studio audience, please? Now that knowing that we've made two people happier, well,
why don't you sit together in the same row? They're not even sitting in the same row.
Oh, you probably have a lot to talk over, don't you, Miss Worley?
Well, I suppose, but it's been so long.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Worley, you have anything to say to your sister?
No. Mm. No, you've changed.
Uh-huh. Well, I know that we've...
You mind if I sit in another row?
No, you can sit anywhere you want.
Where do you live now, Tabitha?
Bondurant, Wyoming.
Uh-huh. And so, as they exchange anecdotes of days gone by...
Wait a minute, I'd better get out of here. I have an appointment. I have to have my teeth fixed. Would you mind if I run along?
No,
no, you go ahead.
All right, and so we have rejoined the Whirlies, and we know that you've added a little bit of human kindness.
Is that why you threw me here?
Yes, you can go back any time now.
Well, I might as well run along home now. There's probably a plane leaving. Bye.
Bye, Miss Whirly.
Isn't that heartwarming?
It certainly is. It did something to me. An old friend of ours, Ferris Gallagher, is here today. I suppose you have something on your mind, Ferris, don't you?
Yes, I certainly have.
I've seen you for quite some time. Mr. Gallagher is the friendly proprietor of your neighborhood supermarket,
and,
Gallagher's.
Mr. Gallagher wanted us to point out, too, that whatever he says does not intend in any way. He doesn't want you to take it as a criticism of his customers.
No, Gallagher's supermarket puts service foremost, and Mr. Ferris Gallagher would be the last one to criticize his customers.
It's just that Mr. Gallagher, who usually stands near the checking point at the front of the store, is worried about the condition of some of his customers' clothes.
Seems that an unusually large number of customers are not taking care of their clothes. Mr. Gallagher would have told you this himself, but he was a little embarrassed to mention it.
See, when they enter the store, everything seems okay. Their pockets are neatly creased, coats fitting at the neckline.
But when they leave, their pockets are all out of shape, kind of bulgy, and their coats sag as if too heavy for them.
To use Mr. Gallagher's words, they look lumpy.
Now, it suddenly occurred to Mr. Ferris Gallagher the other day that maybe some of his customers at the supermarket were thoughtlessly putting tomato cans and floor mops and 5-pound bags of sugar in their pockets instead of their shopping wagon.
You know how it is. You have your mind on something else, and you stuff a gallon jug of vinegar up under your sweater or something
so,
like that.
Mr. Gallagher just thought that have us mention this to you today.
He also asked us to remind you of the new all-mirror ceiling he had installed recently.
And he can see you from all parts of the store with that mirror.
So in closing, Mr. Gallagher says he's going to have the cops in if you bums don't stop cribbing.
His specialty for tomorrow, 2 cans mulligatawny soup, 27 cents. That do all right for you, Ferris?
No, it's fine.
Okay.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Thank you very much.
Incidentally, before we call in Wally Ballou, just a word here. We've been asked to make the following announcement by our popular building superintendent, Alex Snedeker. I hope I pronounced that right.
Mr. Snedeker has charge of the Civil War cannon and the cannonballs which decorate the lawn at the entrance on Forbush Avenue.
Now, part of Mr. Snedeker's duties are to keep the cannonballs and the cannon painted a nice shiny black.
He cannot do this if the tenants continue to climb up and down on the cannon.
And if the tenants keep rolling the cannonballs up and down the space in front of the apartment.
So please don't touch the cannon or the cannonballs on the lawn at the entrance on Forbush Avenue.
Okay, now to Wally Ballou, somewhere in America.
No,
you got the wrong thing, Master Control.
No,
let's
the patch cord there.
Molly Baloo. The Kazuski Kazoo Company in Kalamazoo, Michigan, where today we're speaking with the greatest name in kazoo makers, the Kazuski folks. In the background, you may hear one of the chief testers. As the kazoos come off the assembly line, he tests them with a standard toad kazoo. He's picking them up as they come by. Can we interrupt you just a minute, Mr. Salisbury?
What?
You're Mr. Salisbury. I have on my card here I'm supposed to talk to you about kazoos.
Right.
Can you hold up just a minute?
Yeah.
Or do you want to test them while we're conducting the interview?
Well, I can test them
that
while
way,
we're conducting the interview because they're piling up on me. If I stop for 5 or 10 minutes,
right.
I'll be all day tomorrow trying to get ahead of it.
Well, now, what you're doing is picking up a kazoo.
Oh, that's a dudaroo.
Now, what do you do with that one?
Throw it down. Set it back for another new little piece of paper that goes in there that makes it vibrate.
What was that, sharp or flat?
I don't know. It's up to you to decide.
Uh-huh.
I just have one note. I hum.
Well, if you hum it, would you be the one that's flat?
It isn't the kazoo that will ever be flat. It's the hummer.
Well, why don't you throw yourself out instead of the kazoo? Why take it out of the poor kazoo that
well,
way?
Well, no, what I test is see if there's any holes, any perforations in that little paper that vibrates when you hum through it. That's a perfect
That's a
one.
Good
I'm
going to
take that home myself. That's a peach.
Do you take quite a few of these home, Mr. Salisbury?
I take 5 or 6 a day. They are fun, though, and would you like to have me hum something?
Sure, just soon have a song if it's good. Take me out to the ball game. What was that on the sound?
Ah, that's a wise guy.
Does that happen quite
right,
a lot?
I'll be right back.
Mr. Salisbury's walking over to the assistant checker. And he goes down with one punch. He got up again, Mr. Salisbury.
I'll be right back.
He seems to have the same reaction. So we see industry in motion here at the Kazuski Kazoo Factory in Kalamazoo, and that's about it. Molly Baloo, as we return to New York. The question man is here with another stack of mail in which there are questions. To which he will offer the answer, I hope. How do you feel today, Mr.
All right, let's get to the mail quickly.
All right, here's the first one from a man in Massapequa, Long Island. He says, my friend and I are having a fight. How can I win as he's much bigger than I am?
I'm afraid it was Bill Terry in 1933.
Here's another one from all the way down in New Bern, North Carolina, from a lady who writes, my friend and I are having a fight. Did the United States ever have a woman president?
No, I believe it was in the late 1800s at the Delaware Water Gap.
A young married couple, Mr. Question Man from Philadelphia, writes, we're having an argument. What kind of a guy was Francis Scott Key?
I'm afraid that your friend lost that argument. No, that's the Amazon River.
A pupil in junior high school 93 in Brooklyn, New York, writes, my teacher and I have a bet. Did Eli Whitney or Elvis Presley invent the cotton gin?
No, three cities. Paris, Rome, and London.
And a nice lady in Duluth, Minnesota writes, I like your voice, Mr. Question Man. Can I come up and meet you sometime?
Oh, I'm afraid you won that argument. You can tell your friend that it flows northeastward and empties into the Atlantic Ocean at Newburyport.
And there's a second part to this question. P.S., Mr. Question Man.
Ted Williams.
Finally, a Marine in Camp Lejeune writes to ask, what time of the year does the yellow-shafted flicker molt?
Cumulus clouds, always.
So we hope that the question man has answered some of the problems bothering you listeners. If you have any, send them along. Next time, he will answer such questions as, I know how tall Mount Everest is in feet, but how many inches high is it?
Bob, I think it's time that we place our good luck phone call of the day
right.
to somebody.
Just before we went on the air, we asked the audience to write down a phone number of some near and dear friend of theirs in some part of this country. It was picked at random, and we've placed the call
Or rather, we're placing it now.
Hello?
Operator, we'd like to place
your
the call.
Call, please.
Right, this is Bob and Ray in New York.
961-948.
No, wait a minute.
One moment, please.
This is our lucky phone call feature, operator. We're calling Detroit.
Hello?
Hello?
Long distance.
I know.
Did you wish to place the call, please?
Yes, Detroit, Michigan.
Your number, please.
Oh, well, this number is...
Thank you.
Give me the phone, Bob.
I can't. She talks.
Operator?
631-341.
Operator, this is Bob and Ray in New York.
Anyone at that number?
Yes, we'll talk to anyone at that number.
Tell her it's our lucky phone call.
Station call.
What?
Thank you. One moment, please.
Tell her.
What is the route to Oklahoma City, please?
Well, wait a minute.
By way of Chicago, Kansas City, and St. Louis. Thank you.
151 plus 121 ring down, isn't it?
Well, let me think.
St. Louis, please.
Operator, not St. Louis.
No. City operator. Let me have Kansas City there.
No. Detroit, Michigan is where we're calling. Our lucky phone call of the day.
New York is calling Oklahoma City, please.
No, we're not, operator.
Hang up, Bob.
Oklahoma City. I don't know a soul out there.
Now we'll try again, won't we?
Just dial this, Ray. You can dial long distance now in a lot of places, you know. Hello. This is Bob and Ray in New York City. Are you our lucky phone call receiver for today?
What do you mean?
Are you Mr. Herman Rutledge?
That's right.
And you live at 446-0448 Spruce?
That's right.
Well, sir, this is Bob and Ray calling, and you are lucky.
What?
This is our lucky phone call, sir. We do it every...
What do you mean? What's that?
It's lucky. Do you realize the odds out of all the millions of people in this country of picking your number out of a hat?
Well, I was down cellar. I got oil burner trouble. I was working on that.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, Mr.
Rutledge. Dry up a bus, fella. I got to get back to that.
Well, all right. You're lucky anyway. Do you feel okay?
Don't ever come out to my house.
Well,
happy, huh, Bob?
That was our call. He didn't seem too happy. No, I think we disrupted something out there.